Hysteria is brought to you by iRestore. Father's Day is the perfect time to give the kind of gift he'll actually use, something that helps him feel confident, refreshed, and ready for whatever's next. From June 8th through June 21st, iRestore Father's Day savings event makes it easier to upgrade his self-care routine with limited-time savings on advanced at-home red light therapy devices.
iRestore has been leading the way in red light therapy for over 2 decades, helping shape the category with clinically backed devices trusted by over 500,000 customers worldwide. As more men look for simple, effective ways to support their hair, skin, body, and confidence from home, iRestore continues to offer advanced devices designed to fit seamlessly into everyday routines. The iRestore Elite is their most advanced laser hair growth system, using 300 lasers and 200 LEDs to help grow thicker, healthier hair in as little as 3 months. It's effortless. He can wear it while working, reading, watching TV, or winding down at night, just like I do. And here's the best part. During the Father's Day savings event, you can shop the Dad Edit, featuring the iRestore Elite and iRestore's new Sculpt Belt. The Sculpt Belt brings red light therapy to the body using triple wave LED technology to help firm, smooth, and sculpt while supporting muscle recovery after a workout. Whether you're shopping for dad, your partner, or upgrading your own routine, this makes gift giving simple, thoughtful, and results driven. Because the best Father's Day gifts don't just sit on a shelf, they help him feel his best every day.
Okay, so I have the iRestore mask.
I have the head.
And you have the hat. We haven't tried the Sculpt Belt, so we can't attest
to... We can't speak to that.
Can't speak to it. But it is... I think it's really... It's very 21st century. Be like, buy your dad a belt for Father's Day.
Very.
The iRestore Sculpt Belt for Father's Day. No, I love my mask. I wear it at night. I didn't realize... I was like reading up about it as I was wearing it. I was like, what are people saying about it? Because I really love mine. And I didn't realize that other red light therapy masks don't make it easy for you to like move around and do stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, some of them are a real pain in the chukus.
Oh, my gosh. So easy. I just put it on while I'm watching TV. I do my little skincare routine. I get my skin all clean. And then I put it on and I like watch TV or I scroll or I hang out. Sometimes I'm like hanging out with my kid. I can like get up and move around. It's super easy, and it's
like... You
want to
hear my funniest trick for what? Moving around with my mask?
What?
So when I was in the hospital back in February, I was like, bring me my mask. If I'm sitting here, I might as well get it. I was walking around the hospital with my IV and my mask on. I thought I was so funny.
You probably looked like Darth Maul, which is really cool. And, you know, so and dads and moms alike are interested in that character. So if you want to just look like Darth Maul every night while you get your skin looking great, iRestore mask.
Do it. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
But look, I love my hat. Look at this. All my baby hairs are growing back in after they fell out because of perimenopause.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. I want to see you in the hat. Send me a selfie in the hat the next time.
I will. I'll do it. I'll post it for the group.
iRestore is celebrating Father's Day with limited time savings on their red light therapy devices. From June 8th through June 21st, you can save 33% on gift ready favorites like the iRestore Elite Helmet and iRestore's new Sculpt Belt as part of the Dad Edit. Plus, your order comes with a gift with purchase valued at up to $190. Just head to iRestore.com and use code Hysteria to take advantage of the sale. That's Hysteria at iRestore.com. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Give Dad a gift that helps him feel confident, refreshed, and ready to take on his day. Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Alyssa, on one hand, Barry Weiss is kind of a Cinderella story. In a time now? In a time of limited social mobility, she is a bright middle class girl from Pittsburgh. You know, her parents were small business owners who is now risen into the media
elite class. I'm getting comfortable for this.
Okay, she's risen into the media elite class simply by kissing ass. Listen, take heed. Middle
Tale
class
as old
girls,
as time.
Upper middle class people, just kiss enough ass with as much gusto as you can muster, and you too can keep getting jobs that you're not qualified for. Right now, she's slated to be put in charge of CNN.
Can you believe it? I really thought they'd stop at CBS
because
she's doing such
a good job at CBS.
Ratings are down. Iconic talent out the window.
Yeah. She's doing a great job running CBS News.
Iconic talent, by the way, that was like, I thought she might be biased, but it turns out I think she's just bad at her job.
She's just bad at her job and has no concept of a world that exists outside of the people that, like, toady underneath her Twitter, her tweets, you know, and like free press subscribers. But what job do you think she'll get next now that she's being put in charge of CNN?
Well, I'm going to guess. You think she'll have her own? At some point, she's going to end up with her own show. Is she not?
She wants her own show so bad.
So bad. Like, so bad. Like, every time CBS gets a great interview, she takes it for herself.
Yeah. Well, you know, here's the thing. Having your own show is hard, as Megyn Kelly demonstrated. Like, when Megyn Kelly was given her NBC show, she just couldn't do it because everyone was like, fake ass bitch, you're being fake. Like,
yeah, they were like, pretending we know you're mean.
Yeah, quit pretending to be nice.
Freaking us out.
So, I don't know. Maybe she'll get her own show. She'll be like the Oprah of sucking. Barry's favorite things.
Stubby. I can't even. I was going to try to do it. You get a car. You get a car. But I can't imagine what she would give people.
A pair of loafers, I guess. Today, we recap how Graham Blattner became the Democratic nominee for Maine's Senate seat. We talk about all that stuff. We threatened to talk about it last week, but stuff was about to happen, so we're going to talk about it this week. And then we check in on some of the latest Epstein Files news. That's still going.
It's still there. You know, the Reading Room has moved to Washington, D.C. in honor of Donald Trump's birthday gala this weekend.
Amazing. How festive. Well, and then on the show, we have First Partner of California, Jennifer Siebel Newsom, joining us for a conversation about her new film, Misrepresentation, Rise Up. And her status as the right-wing media target du jour. Then, of course, we get to Sani Petty. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for the unpleasant realization that for some American voters this fall, the choice will be between a dirtbag and a slime ball.
Dream big dreams.
Dream big dreams. So last week, as I mentioned in the intro, we only touched lightly on the Graham Blattner stuff. That was because starting Wednesday, there started to be rumors in pretty much every group chat involving anybody who had ever lived in Washington, D.C. or worked in East Coast media, alleging that there was a big, bad Graham Blattner story about
to drop. All getting the ding, ding, dings.
We were all getting ding, ding, dings. I heard so many different rumors from so many different people. There were and different versions of things that were going around. And then plus, people on the right on Twitter were like rubbing their hands together like, you guys have no idea what's coming. You guys have no idea what's coming. And the story did come out. And we're going to get into the details of that story in a second and whether it mattered. But here's what we know as of today. Maine held its primary on Tuesday. And Blattner was declared the Democratic nominee like right as the polls closed. It was like, yep, okay, he won. The choice is now between Collins, Susan Collins, who back in 1992, I believe, promised to only run for two terms in the Senate.
Yeah.
How's that going, Susie? Susan Collins will be up against Blattner in November. We really, really want a Democrat to win the Senate race in Maine. It is one of the most vulnerable races that Republicans are in this year. At the same time, we're going to have to talk a little bit about how we wound up with Blattner and the pattern of flawed, messy men getting a pass over qualified, proven women and whether or not this is even our circus or our monkeys.
I mean, it's like not our circus. Not our monkeys. Mm-hmm. Neither of us live in Maine. However, there are like tentacles. There are parts of this story that have tentacles to things that we have talked about in the past too, which, you know, part of this is like, I guess I don't want to be a hypocrite, right?
Yeah. I think that there also, here's the thing that I've kind of been struggling with.
Mm-hmm.
The Overton window of creepiness has shifted so far because of Donald Trump, who has been accused of sexual misconduct by dozens of women, cheated on every wife he's had, cheated on his current wife when she was postpartum with their only child. Like, he's a complete fucking slimy, slimy motherfucker, terrible to women. And there are people that he's surrounded himself with who are the same way. And so, you know, I think it's completely unserious for the Fox News right-wing types to think that Blattner is somehow deserves to be, like, ousted or he doesn't deserve people's votes because of these things, because that's completely – that is unserious. That is an unserious accusation for the party of Trump and Pete Hegseth and, you know, Lord –
Totally.
And like, Corey Lewandowski and all those – it is an unserious –
And Kristi Noem.
And Kristi Noem. Like, it is an unserious accusation to make. But I think that that we can examine how we got here as Democrats, mm-hmm. and whether we want to keep going here in the future – even though we do want him to win in the fall.
Correct.
Okay.
So, correct. Yes.
So
sorry.
Let's catch people up to speed with a Cliff's Notes version in case you're not all plugged into Maine politics. Plattner launched his splashy Senate campaign at the end of last summer with a viral ad and an endorsement from Bernie Sanders. It's because Graham Plattner has very good politics. He says he believes in things that are align with the populist left. And that impressed Bernie Sanders, who is sort of the, you know.
He's the male Empress Dowager.
Absolutely. And so Plattner was running against Governor Janet Mills, who the sitting governor of Maine, mm-hmm. for the spot to challenge Susan Collins in the general. People were really excited about Plattner mm-hmm. over Mills, because Mills is, she would have been a 79-year-old as she was a freshman senator. And I think that especially last summer, there's a lot of pain points in Democratic politics right now about people not retiring when they should, or people not stepping aside when
right.
they should, people doing it when they're too old. Dianne Feinstein was practically
wheeled out,
a mummy by the end, like sitting in on the like Judiciary Committee, barely there.
Do you want to make like just a little itsy bitsy point, just because I always little low grade misogyny? Hmm. Yes, Janet Mills was quite old to be running. Ed Markey is running the state next to her. Nobody seems to have a problem with him, and he's a year older than Janet Mills.
Mm-hmm. But then again, nobody like splashed in. You know, there wasn't some sort of former.
Just saying,
there wasn't some guy that was like a lobster fisherman or whatever, like who doesn't pronounce the R in car out there with like, you know, his like beefy forearms rolling his sleeves up and talking about politics. Like, I think the Plattner of it all was what gave people an alternative to having like an old establishment Democrat. And that's what got people excited. When there's no alternative, people just kind of sleepwalk to whatever candidate is handed to them. But this was energizing because this person is young. He's only 41. I believe. He's young. He is unvarnished. And by unvarnished, I think that registers to voters as like not fake. I think they're kind of tired with the consultant class, overly prepared, professional, rehearsed type of politician. And so, you know, the hunger has swung in the other direction. And now it seems like what people want, or what people say they want, is somebody who tells it like it is. But how it is sometimes not great. Plattner's flaws kind of trickled out throughout the campaign. In the fall, there was the Reddit account from as early as 2013 that exposed that he was saying some kind of racist stuff, mm-hmm. minimizing sexual assault. You know, could have just been edgelording. A lot of people are edgelords online, you know. Shortly after the Reddit post came out, he also revealed he had a skull and crossbones tattoo that resembled a Totenkopf Nazi SS symbol, which is bad. He said that he didn't know the tattoo had been a Nazi symbol, and he got it covered up. But then, you know, things were quiet for a while. People questioned the judgment of a person who had a Nazi tattoo and didn't know what it meant.
Mm-hmm.
But then more things came out that caused people to question his judgment. Apparently, he was sexting a lot of people when him and his wife first got married in 2023, yep. which is something that she disclosed as something possibly problematic. He also had some other stuff going on, which came out last week. Meanwhile, on April 30th, Janet Mills suspended her campaign. So mm-hmm. Janet Mills wasn't even going to run against him because she wasn't polling very well, and he was just outraising the shit out of her. So,
right.
And then what happened, Alyssa?
Well, then in late May, a former campaign staffer, Genevieve McDonald, came out with information about his infidelity to his wife. Early in Plattner's campaign, his wife, Amy Gertner, disclosed that she had discovered explicit texts to several women outside of their marriage in the spring of 2025, and that they were working through it in marriage counseling. She revealed the information privately to a senior aide who had been conducting opposition research just days before their Labor Day rally with Bernie Sanders. The campaign deemed the messages a private matter and carried on. When the information became public, the campaign posted a video over 4 minutes long of Gertner stating that she stands by her husband and that she is angry and disappointed that her confession was made public. Then, last Thursday, the day after we recorded Hysteria, a piece came out in the New York Times with the headline, "Several Women Who Dated Graham Plattner Recall Unsettling Behavior." The Times spoke to several of Plattner's ex-girlfriends who had positive things to say about their relationships, but three other women interviewed described a more volatile relationship. The main source who went on the record was Lindsay Fifield, and she asserted he had known that his tattoo had Nazi associations, said he never hit or punched her, but would regularly grab her by the shoulders, sometimes leaving marks. She says he shoved her into a bedroom and would not let her out. She stayed overnight. She said he kept weapons and spoke about violence, and says he fantasized about raping people to assert his dominance and referred to women as hatchet wounds, a crude term for female anatomy. A Plattner representative said he strongly disputes any claims of physical intimidation or altercations, and the Times said they could not corroborate the allegations.
All right, Alyssa. So
that's it. That's the roundup.
So I'm going to start on an unconventional foot here and go in on the Times.
Okay.
The Times hung their source out to dry here.
Yeah.
So Lindsay Fifield is a Republican operative, and she's worked in Republican politics for quite some time. Now, that doesn't mean that she's making this up, but it does mean that she would have a reason to want the Democratic candidate in an important Senate race to be disparaged in public, right? But it doesn't mean that she's making things up. But the New York Times said that they couldn't corroborate her story. And also, the day after the story ran, Fifield said that the New York Times had led her to believe that they could corroborate the story. So if Fifield is to be believed, she was told one thing in order to get her to speak to a reporter, and that didn't pan out.
Right.
And she spoke to the reporter on the condition that those things would pan out. And so she feels misled by the story. Also, reading the story, I have to say, I'm not trying to say that I don't think it fits into a pattern of bad judgment that we've established with Plattner, because I do. I think that it fits. It's like, okay, this guy has demonstrated he's rough around the edges, to say the least, right? But the story as it was printed, obviously lawyered all to fuck, like lawyered line by line. The story as it was printed kind of came across as a bit toothless to me.
Yeah.
And one of those Rorschach test stories where
it's
like
100%
people who were skeptical of Plattner, who didn't think that he was the right person to be running for Senate, who were wary of an outsider without very much of a like public, you know, very much public persona and maybe some bad stories already in the press about him. People who already thought something bad about him were like, of course, I knew it. And people who want to believe that he is the savior of politics and he's going to be the one to finally take down Susan Collins in Maine after years and years of these consultant vetted candidates, like last cycle's candidate, they're like, who cares? Like, this is kind of a nothing burger. And I feel as though those people may even feel their allegiance to Plattner strengthened by this.
I agree, totally agree with you.
And so the end result is the people that don't like him still don't like him. And the people that do like him
are like ride or die now.
More, yes,
yeah,
exactly. They feel like they're embattled because the New York Times piece. I tried to read it just with a totally like blank.
Me too.
It did read a little bit hit piecey to me
without a hit.
Yeah, it was like they were. It almost seemed like a fishing expedition. And I know that a reporter wouldn't try to run a piece like that if they didn't have something bigger. So I feel like there must have been some – I mean, this is just me, my opinion, having worked in newsrooms before. It read to me like there were things that the reporter had that they wanted to have in the story that they couldn't
have
in the story.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. What do you think, Alyssa?
In the whole thing?
Yeah. What's your first thoughts?
Here's my first thoughts. So I like need to go back to emotionally process all of this back in time, right? So Erin, I'm in 2018. Okay. I'm in 2018. Susan Collins is weighing the nomination confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh. She has accepted his word that Roe is settled law because she wanted a permission slip to vote for him. She got it. Roe is dead. She was disappointed. Here we are, 2.3 million women of reproductive age now live in a maternity care desert because of her. The saddest and grossest part about Susan is that I do think she actually cares about women, but cares about keeping her seat more.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And so
– and she often gets to play the fall guy. That's her job.
She does. And so, like, for me, I just needed to start this off because I don't think people can understand or I can explain the depths of my disdain for Susan Collins, mm-hmm. which brings me to Graham Plattner.
Okay.
Yes, I want a Dem to win in Maine. I want a Dem. Do I think that Graham Plattner has done the bare minimum in addressing some of these allegations that have come out in recent history? I do. Did I take to the streets in 2018 to protest Kavanaugh based on allegations against him that happened when he was in high school? Yes, I did. And so I feel twisted and hypocritical about so much of like what is happening right now. But the thing that I thought was most interesting, okay, there are other things. The video that his wife put out.
Oh, her two-camera video that was put on social media.
If you're going to ask your wife for help, if your wife, nay, if she offers and wants to help, that is wonderful. Do not have her out there carrying your water for you. Like, I think if anything that has been in his defense, I think hers was the most successful. And I thought that that was a really kind of scummy thing. You know, I felt like there she is again. You know, it brought us back to like, which we had talked about weeks ago, you know, when Jim McGreevy got caught and Governor McGreevy got caught in a scandal and there's his wife. It brings me back to Elliot Spitzer when he gets caught with a prostitute and his wife Silda is standing next to him looking at him. Except in this scenario, Spitzer and McGreevy weren't present,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah. And so she did all of that herself. And like the thing that I have a hard time resolving around the Nazi tattoo is like if I went to a thrift store and bought an L.L. Bean bag that had a symbol on it that I didn't know the meaning of and I just carried it around and someone was like, girl, that's a Klan symbol. And I was like, I had no idea. Alyssa, you're Alyssa Mastromonaco. You're carrying around a bag with a symbol. You never thought to check what the fuck it was. Like the thing that concerns me in all of this is not so much, okay, Graham, my brother, you got a tattoo. Either you are the most incurious bastard, which I am not sure is like the greatest selling point to be in the U.S. Senate, or you're just like a terrible liar. I think I would have accepted more of a story where he was like, look, I got the tattoo when I was high and it was expensive to get removed and so I didn't. That would have at least rang true to me. But I think in so much of what he has been called on for someone who is so admired for being this anti-establishment, all of his responses have felt workshopped to fuck. Mm-hmm. And therefore not authentic to who he is.
Mm-hmm. So you're more, you find the Nazi tattoo and the story, like the explanation around it worse than what this New York Times story is about. Like his
I think they're both, I think they're kind of the same. They're heads of the same coin.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's like, I think that like the thing that is missing is a real sit down interview. Like I think we both watched when these allegations came out, the New York Times article, he did an interview with Chris Hayes on MSNBC.
Mm-hmm.
And
MS Now.
Just MS Now. Oh, I'm sorry, MS Now. And just watching that interview, I was like, oh, he does have consultants now and they gave him talking points. And I just don't think that that is the way, like I said, I'm not a Maine voter, but he's the nominee now. More is going to come at him. I just think he's got to handle it better.
Yeah. I mean, he still won handily in Maine. That's the thing. Like
he did. He did.
I was
not just handily.
Yeah.
Like it was handily
decisive. But this is kind of reminding me that the stuff about just pivoting to the stuff about like women, his treatment of women.
Yeah, for sure.
Which in the, you know, he has said he was, you know, he has PTSD. He served like 4 tours, combat tours as a Marine. He was drinking heavily during some of these alleged incidents. Some of them were like, I mean, not that it's an it's not an excuse, but it's an explanation where it's like, oh, yeah.
It's a circumstance.
A guy with PTSD was having a hard time dealing with it. So he was drinking heavily and he was an asshole right. to women. Like that totally, yep, that tracks. That totally
tracks.
The thing that I keep sticking on is, A, the attacks from Republicans are very like Newt Gingrich attacking Bill Clinton to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like, check yourself.
Yeah, because, you know, there have been some reports, specifically from one reporter in Maine, that it was kind of widely known that Susan Collins got married to her husband like months after his wife died of cancer.
Who had been her boss at one point.
Yeah, yeah. He had been her boss. And then the Maine reporter tweeted, Andy O'Brien is the Maine reporter's name. He tweeted, Susan Collins should be careful about throwing stones from glass houses when it comes to issues of infidelity. It's been an open secret in Washington, D.C. for decades, but the Wall Street Journal and New York Times have never probed into it. Wonder why. So, you know, there are some like disgruntled reporters, people who are like, look, a politician being kind of a piece of shit in relationships, news at 10. Like, there's so many people who do it. And there's something very morally incongruous with people like Susan Collins and, you know, the party of Pete Hegseth and the party of Donald Trump.
Oh, no,
attacking someone for. So I feel like that's one thing. So we're about to enter a really annoying period of time where, like, people on Fox News are clutching their pearls like they weren't sitting on a couch next to a guy who was fucking one of the producers and getting her pregnant while he was still married to his wife.
Right.
Like, that is about to happen. But from the Democrats' perspective, the thing that worries me here is I remember right after the 2024 election and everyone was like, okay, why did Kamala Harris lose? It was the economy. People didn't like that she came across as fake. She was too polished. She was too fancy. They didn't like that she kind of like gave lawyer. You know, they didn't like that she seemed like somebody that would be really comfortable at a vineyard. You know, they didn't like what they declared fakeness, which was just basically a woman trying to act professional in public. Okay, fine. So the pendulum swings in the opposite direction, and now we have what I believe the New York Times opinion, I don't remember which opinion columnist dubbed it this, but dirtbag left politicians.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? So now we've swung in this direction, and, you know, if that suits the voters of Maine, then that suits the voters of Maine. And,
yeah.
And what
vote a Democrat.
Yeah. We'll figure out what to – but the thing that worries me long-term is that the parties right now are divided by gender more than they have ever been.
Absolutely.
And Democrats need women more than they ever have.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that has happened with Democrats is that they have made promises to women, relied on women's votes, depended on women's volunteer hours, women mm-hmm. phone banking, women organizing, women do it like running canvassing. Not that men aren't doing it, but it is mostly women.
Right.
And I am worried that, and I have seen that when Democrats are in power, the first thing that gets sacrificed is things that women need or things that women voters have been asking for. Specifically, and most, this is most dramatic in like Black women. Black women are the first ones on the chopping block, and Black women are the first ones that Democrats just take for granted. Exactly. I think that Democrats need to actually start delivering for women. We can have like a Graham Plattner in office, not ideal, but also I don't get to make that decision. We can have a Graham Plattner in, but they better be fucking voting for policies.
Show us
that you are going to do the things that you have promised to your voters, like universal health care, paid parental leave, like the populist policies that made Bernie Sanders like endorse you. Like, show up and actually deliver some of those things. Because I think if Democrats end up in the worst case scenario is we get another Fetterman and we have somebody in office that is suddenly just willing to roll over and go on Katie Miller's podcast and be buddy-buddy with Republicans and be completely willing to sacrifice things that your voting base has been asking for the second you get any pushback. We just need people who are going to fight for what Democratic voters actually want. And if Plattner is going to do that, then I can like overlook some of this stuff. But that has not been approved. He is not a known quantity yet. And so
no, that's exactly it. And I think that we, as people, again, who do not vote in Maine, I think we are allowed to be skeptical until we see him take – because, you know, the other thing that did just like bristle a bit too is that there is a – over the years, all the years that we've been doing this podcast, Me Too, you know, came and gone, is like believing women. And the hard part about his story too is that the – it is that apparently we're not supposed to believe any of the women. One was a Republican, and therefore she was not to be believed. And then his – and then the op-ed, his campaign manager, who is a lobster woman, who is an elected official herself, was like, I left the campaign because I did not trust her. And they were like disparaging her. And it's like, well – here's another thing. I'm just going to give free campaign advice. You need a retort that's not just women are lying.
Yeah.
Like that women can't be trusted, because like that's the thing. If that's the easy – that's the lowest hanging fruit. That is the laziest answer.
It's the laziest answer, and it's a dangerous answer, because who do you need to vote for you? Women. You need women to vote. You need women to be excited about voting for you. Like I know that Democrats have a problem attracting and retaining men, but also like do we really want to be attracting and retaining a certain type of man? Because like there's a certain type of man that I'm just kind of like, yeah, fuck him. Let him go like be Rogan-pilled and vote for like the person who thinks that fluoride is going to turn you gay. Whatever. Like, I don't want a party that is reaching out to those people, because I don't think that there is any winning those people over. I want a party that actually fulfills the promises that it makes to its voting base, and that starts to advocate for policies like in a real way that its voters want. I don't want them to just vote, like do things to appease an imaginary centrist voter that never votes for them. It always breaks Republican. So I like the Plattner thing. I think that it's also dangerous for Democrats to set such high moral standards that normal people couldn't possibly meet them.
Totally.
I don't want to just elect a bunch of
– and I don't even think that that's what this is, right? It's like – and I'm just going to speak for myself. I care 1% that he was sexting outside of his marriage.
Yeah. I kind of wish I didn't know that, actually.
I don't want to – I don't – that's fine. I'm not a purist like that. I don't care.
Yeah.
I 100% though care do how you respond to it once it becomes public.
Sure. Because you responding know? To things like this is part of the job. Is being – like if you do become an elected official, you're going to have to answer questions that are uncomfortable. And I guess this in a way is a demonstration of how he answers uncomfortable questions when maybe he did something wrong or maybe he's not comfortable with it. I think that's a really important point. And hopefully, you know, there is a learning curve. He's not a professional politician.
No.
He's kind of unpolished. And that's, I think, one of the things that voters see in him. But I just really hope that he is prepared to get better at responding to and reckoning with mistakes that he's made in the past, if they are actual mistakes and not character flaws, which I'm going to just say TBD. And I hope that he's prepared to actually take the fight to people who are willing to roll over and sacrifice the needs of his voting base the second they get any pushback. That's all I'm asking. I mean, it's not that tall of an order, right?
I feel like we've kind of asked the bare minimum here.
I think we've asked the bare minimum and...
But an important... Bare minimum.
An important bare minimum. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more news.
Hysteria is brought to you by Article. Article makes it effortless to create a stylish, long-lasting home at an unbeatable price. They offer a curated range of mid-century, modern, coastal, and Scandi-inspired pieces that not only shine on their own, but also pair seamlessly with nearly any other Article product. This thoughtful design approach makes it incredibly easy to mix and match, helping you create a space that feels cohesive and stylish. Article takes great care in curating its collection, focusing solely on high-quality, meaningful pieces that stand the test of time. There's no filler. Every item is chosen for its craftsmanship, design, and lasting value. You can immediately tell the difference in quality when you receive an Article piece.
I mean, what else can we say about Article that hasn't already been said on this,
on
this very show? I love it. I love it. I don't trust any other furniture retailer. Like, you look at the website. Everything on the website looks exactly like how it looks when it comes. Because I've been burned in the past where, like,
believe me,
you look at something and you're like, oh, this looks cute. And then it comes and you're like, oh my gosh, this color's terrible, or the wood looks cheap.
Like, what's wrong with the fabric?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. With Article, it's like, just look at the website. That is how the product looks. It is accurately represented. Also, the website is beautiful, and everything I've gotten from them is just gorgeous. I love it. And super high quality, heavy. Like, my couch outside, my outside couch.
Oh, it's awesome.
It's amazing, but it's like you can feel how high quality it is, because it is like a hefty piece of furniture. And it has lasted for years, and it looks great. And the cushions are easy to wash. You just kind of take them off and throw them in the machine and then air dry them. Yeah, it's pretty easy. And I love how easy the delivery is. They're so good at delivering. I'm like, are you messing with me? Like, you don't...
It feels white glove.
Yeah, it does feel white glove. Article offers fast, affordable shipping across the U.S. and Canada with options for professional assembly if you prefer a hands-off experience. Have a question or need help with your design choices? Article's customer care team is available 7 days a week, offering knowledgeable support and even free interior design services to help you get your home just right. With Article's 30-day satisfaction guarantee, you can shop with confidence, knowing that if you're not completely in love with your new furniture, you can easily return it. This peace of mind ensures you can invest in your home without hesitation. Article is offering our listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. To claim, visit article.com/hysteria, and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. That's article.com/hysteria for $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
Hysteria is brought to you by OneSkin. You've heard us talk about OneSkin before, and whether you're someone who tries every new skincare product that hits the market, or you've been using the same one or two things for years, at some point, most of us realize our skin just isn't keeping up the way it used to. That's what OneSkin changed for me. It didn't just make my existing routine better, it actually works differently than anything else I've tried. As we age, some skin cells stop functioning the way they should. Longevity scientists call them zombie cells.
Oh.
And that's what, zombie cells.
I don't want zombies on my face.
Girl, I'm 50. I got zombies on my face. And that's what's actually driving those visible signs of aging, like these fine lines that are less visible now. The loss of firmness and the dullness that creeps in over time. And OneSkin's OS1 peptide was specifically engineered to address those. So you're getting everything you expect from great skincare with OS1 doing something most skincare was never built to do. So, Erin, I use the eye cream.
Mm-hmm. I use it too.
My crow's feet, oh, they settled in. They made a home. The winter was hard. And I use it morning and night. I use it morning and night, and I love it. And it doesn't give me... I've had a problem in the past with eye cream. Like, you know how some... It seeps. You know, you put it around your eyes, but it ends up around your cheeks and stuff. And some eye creams would give me zits, and this one does not.
You know what? I was going to comment on the texture of the eye cream as well, because a lot of eye creams I've tried in the past have been, like, on the sticky side.
Yeah.
Not sticky, but like dewy, sticky, goopy almost.
Right, and like I can feel them when I wear my glasses 5 hours later.
Right, like it sits on the surface of your skin rather than soaking in and doing what it's supposed to do. You know, it's funny, I've been using OneSkin's eye cream, and then also their face lotion, their basic face lotion. Yeah. And since I've been taking my skincare more seriously, OneSkin keeps sending us stuff. And so I'm like, okay, I guess I got to use this every night. And I look at pictures of myself even from 5 or 6 years ago, and I'm like, what if I had taken such good care of my skin then?
Like, think about it all the time.
You know, it's like, I feel like my skin looks just as good, if not better now, than it did that many years back. I'm like, gosh, I should have been doing this.
I mean, before. Your skin looks as nice as it did when I met you, and that was like almost 10 years ago.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, and thank OneSkin. This isn't just our experience. OneSkin's results are backed by 4 peer-reviewed clinical studies, over 10,000 five-star reviews. You can count me among the five-star reviews. And they've been recognized by Bloomberg as a leader in skin longevity. You really don't need a complicated routine to get healthier, younger-looking skin. Born from over a decade of longevity research, OneSkin's OS1 peptide is proven to target the visible signs of aging, helping you unlock your healthiest skin now and as you age. For a limited time, try OneSkin with 15% off using code Hysteria at oneskin.co/hysteria. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code Hysteria. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that hasn't and won't forget about the Epstein files. I have an island-based correction to issue this.
Aaron!
Speaking of islands. So right before, I've had like a chaotic couple of weeks. Yeah. I'll give more information when the time comes. But I've had a chaotic couple of weeks. And right before we recorded last week, I was just like scrolling through social media and I kind of like skimmed 2 stories that it turns out were about the same thing. And they were about Ivanka Trump talking about discovering an unspoiled island in the Mediterranean. Yep. I also saw what I thought was something about protests in Armenia. It turns out the protests were in Albania, which is where the island is, which it was the same story. But I like to imagine that people in Armenia also don't like her. Because I know, like,
I mean,
people.
I heard what you said, and I didn't track it, so I knew what you were saying.
Yes.
I think most people probably did.
It was Albania. Albania is a wonderful country on the Mediterranean. It has some like unspoiled island paradise areas that have no building on it that the Kushners want to turn into a luxury resort because they're fucking awful, and also they have no concept of how they look to the general public. Like, really, you want to make an island? Given your association with another famous island that was used for bad things?
I feel like I would just like press pause on islands for a while.
Yeah, I would say peninsulas only. You can find if you can find a beautiful Mediterranean peninsula, that's less likely to invoke comparisons between
very good.
Epstein. Okay, so Hysteria listeners know that the Epstein files have kept us up at night. And I think I bother Sammy Sage about the Epstein files.
Oh, my God. You and I, she'll be like, I was just texting with Aaron. We love ourselves some Sammy Sage.
From Betches Media. No, we're all friends in women-focused media
properties.
That's
how it works.
That's how it works. But, yeah, Sammy Sage is also always willing to, like, bro down about the Epstein files. She's always like, oh, have you read this?
And she's maybe even a hair more online than we are.
I don't know how she does it. I'm just going to – I know this is like an Epstein story.
She's
not a
full machine. She is it's a Sammy Sage tribute page.
Literal machine. But the Epstein files have been keeping me up at night. They've been keeping you up at night.
We can't.
We have been keeping Sammy Sage up at night, asking her about the Epstein files. And even though Trump and his administration have tried over and over to bury them, the story isn't going anywhere. Like a zombie rising from the ground over and over again. Here's the latest on the files. So last week, in front of the House Oversight Committee, Pam Bondi, remember her?
Uh-huh.
Who is working in the private sector for a job she's very excited about, tried to distance herself from the handling or fumbling of the files. She claimed that Todd Blanche, her deputy, current acting attorney general and current nominee to replace Pam Bondi, was actually responsible for the entire release of the Epstein files. She later denied on social media that she was throwing Todd under the bus, but come on, Pam, we're not stupid. Come on.
Pam, girl, look. Pam got ousted from her job, asked if she could stay until the end of June. They told her no. She basically got escorted out of the building. I think that we're witnessing Bondi's revenge.
I'm just going to say Bondi's revenge is a little bit of a Pyrrhic revenge, if you will, because it's kind of reading about her appearance in front of the oversight committee. I'm kind of like, okay, Pam, what were you doing? Like, what was your job? What were you doing during that time that you were the attorney general? If you weren't managing the Epstein files, because I'm old enough to remember when she gave a...
Had the files on her desk.
She had the files on her desk and just waiting for her to go through them. And, you know, she was running around like ripping pictures off the wall to show her like love for President Trump. But like what? Okay, so she wasn't doing the Epstein files, like she said. What? I just want to, like, what were you doing? What? Like, how, like, how did you spend your time? I really want to know how she spent her time as Attorney General. Besides appearing in cabinet meetings and saying that Donald Trump had saved, like, hundreds of millions of lives by stopping fentanyl.
Do you think she was just, like, burning the Epstein files? Like, what was she doing?
I don't, it's an honest question.
Was she herself redacting?
I don't, she had a black Sharpie and she was just.
That's how she spent her days.
Maybe, but I also believe that Todd Blanche was the one that was handling it. Like, I believe, yeah. I believe that.
I mean, he was Trump's personal lawyer. Of course. It is the most crooked person. It is the most inappropriate person who could have been handling it. So therefore, that is absolutely who was handling it.
Yes, absolutely. And I totally believe he was handling it. But the follow-up question to that is, Pam Bondi, what was your job? What were you doing? Should we be clawing back your salary? Like, should there be?
I mean, Aaron, if we went cabinet secretary by cabinet secretary, there is a goodly number of salaries we could be clawing back. Because our girl, Kristi Noem, was just out shooting videos that cost something akin to Star Wars.
I mean, yeah. Like, she was spending Christopher Nolan money.
Yes.
She was spending Christopher Nolan money to make a video of herself riding a horse that she rented.
While traveling around with her boyfriend who worked for her.
Yeah. And they got.
I'm just saying there are a lot of them in this administration.
There are a lot of them. I actually think that a real spicy Democrat could ruffle some feathers by saying that their first order of business, if they get elected, is going to be to introduce legislation to claw back, to audit all of the spending on salaries.
Live for it.
And claw back anything.
You know
what?
That sounds like a special government. We hear all these SGEs thrown around, these SGEs. Someone needs to go make Katie Porter an SGE.
Oh my God.
And send her into the bowels of the government and do a clawback project.
Oh my gosh.
Absolutely. You're welcome. That's a perfect idea.
That would be great. I think, you know, Todd Blanche, Pam Bondi, whatever they were doing or not doing, it was not following the law. They were not fulfilling the duties of their office. There's also more about the, like, scuzziness of people in the files. I don't remember who it was who told me. I think it's a comedian. I think it's a joke. Maybe it's Megan Gailey. I'm not positive. But the joke is that all men should just be sent to a prison and have to prove they deserve to be released.
Oh, I think that was Megan.
I think that's Megan Gailey. Okay. But, like, the more I read and the more time I spend in the Epstein files is like, yes, yes, that's what should be happening. A new Washington Post investigation into modeling agent Ramzi Alkholi?
Whatever.
Ramzi Alkholi. I'm Alkholi. Came out this week. He was in frequent contact with Epstein, though he claims he only used his relationship with Epstein to leverage modeling opportunities.
Allegedly.
For Victoria's Secret and Vera Wang for his clients. The language in his email suggests otherwise, though. He referred to his models as gifts. Red flag.
Always, always wholesome. Always
yeah.
wholesome.
It's a normal way to talk about another human being who doesn't know you're talking about them. There were also strange details. One of the oddest is that Alkholi pivoted to the music industry. He's in a band now. He lives in California. I don't know. What band is Alkholi in? Okay. He's in a band called Monotronic, and I just saw a picture of him, and it looks like he's wearing a pork pie hat and a button-down bowling shirt, and he looks like He looks like a picture of chlamydia. I would just say that.
That is so vivid.
Yeah, just imagine he's a modeling agent, pork pie hat, in a band.
Got it.
Chlamydia. That's just my opinion. In my opinion, chlamydia. Yeah, and then also, in addition to this guy being just a total fucking creep, Reuters interviewed 23 victims and found that, like, the sloppy redactions in the Epstein files that didn't follow the law in protecting the actual victims, made some of them targets after the DOJ failed to conceal their identities. Marina Lacerda, whose name appeared almost 50 times in the Epstein files, received comments online telling her she deserved what happened. And that her daughter was bullied in school by classmates who asked if Epstein was her dad.
It's fucking deranged. That is such sick behavior.
You know what? This makes me think. Okay, who's out there online, like, in a basement being like, I got to defend Jeffrey Epstein? Like, if you're
– right.
It's like the classic version of, like, if you're a hundredaire, this billionaire doesn't care. Like, why are you out here caping for him?
It's because they all think I think they are tangentially defending Donald Trump.
But that's so...
Right? Like, why else?
Why else? The other explanation is like influence campaign. Like, we know that we know that people in that shady corner of the world are really eager to do that. They will invoke call a whole army of bots, and the army of bots will encourage real people who believe the crazy bot things, will embolden them into speaking or calling in bomb threats or calling in threats to people. So I honestly feel like just hearing about stuff like this, I'm like, it feels like an influence campaign designed to rile up crazy people. So there's fewer crazy people than it seems, but the crazy people are real crazy.
Real crazy. Yeah. They're like deep in it.
From the victim's standpoint, Alyssa, do you think the release of the files has done more harm than good? Nobody's gone to jail in the U.S. Nobody's in trouble.
Look, I am not a victim, so I would never want to tell them like, hey, girls, you should feel good about this. I feel like at least they know each other now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and because that has been – because they have come forward, they now see the others who have come forward. I think there is maybe, I hope, some mental or physical, like, I don't even know the word, not safety or, like, camaraderie is a fucking deranged way to put it, but that, like, they're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
And that it happened to other people, and that because of that, there are other women on this planet who understand – what they went through. And so I hope that in the very sort of sad but hopeful community they have made, that they are find peace and are able to move past this.
Yeah.
But do I think that these, you know, I think people were like, yeah, we believe these women, but we're more scared. Like, and I'm thinking about like the Republicans. Remember, the Republicans were the ones who were like, we want the files. We want the files. And then I think they were like, yeah, like we believe the women, but we're like more scared of Trump. So we're just going to leave it at that.
I don't know. I feel like right now, if I just had to assess from this exact moment, I would say that the release of the files has at this moment brought more harm to the victims.
Yeah,
to the survivors. Not that now it's not over, and it shouldn't be over. And I'm hoping that, you know, justice is working slowly. I know the state of New Mexico is opening a new investigation into Zorro Ranch, which is where Jeffrey Epstein spent time when he was there. So, you know, the wheels are still turning, but they're turning slowly, and they're turning in a way that is a little bit discouraging. It does feel like there are people in power who are actively working to protect whatever it was that Jeffrey Epstein knew. But yeah, right now I don't blame survivors for being like, well, fuck this entire process.
Agree.
It's really discouraging, but you know, we're still, the Epstein thing is not going away. One thing I wanted to talk about briefly before we take another break. Speaking of Epstein, Nancy Mace, congresswoman from South Carolina, was one of the Republicans who was very vocally in favor of the files being released. Now, I don't know what calculation she's doing in her brain. It could be that she, you know, has part of her brand is to make a lot of noise about sexual misconduct. Sometimes the noise is in favor of her own career. Sometimes the noise is just in favor of her continuing to get attention. Sometimes it might actually be rooted in a real sense of care for victims. But knowing what I know about Nancy Mace, I would guess that the third option is probably minimal. Anyway, Ms. Mace was running for governor of South Carolina. And like fellow transphobe Riley Gaines, she came in fifth.
Bye, Nance.
No, we've established that South Carolina is haunted. And so they keep electing people who are dog shit. But in this case, they didn't elect this particular flavor of dog shit to be.
She was
governor.
Too much.
But I do wonder, now that this race is behind her, if Mace is going to continue to try to advocate for more transparency around the Epstein files, or if she's just going to put it to bed and get senioritis. What do you think?
Oh, I think she might let her freak flag fly. She does not like being not seen.
Okay. So you think that she's going to just like be even louder because now
I think she's going to maybe join the ranks of like the Tom Tillis and the Bill Cassidy and the people who were compliant and complicit. and now are like, think they're going to win their souls back in the next 6 months. So we'll see what she has to – we'll see what Nancy is going to bring to the table.
We'll see what Nancy is going to bring to the table. When all is said and done – so, you know, we've talked about Todd Blanche kind of taking the heat from Pam Bondi about the Epstein files. But Todd Blanche was also the one that conducted the jailhouse interview with Ghislaine Maxwell last July, shortly before Ghislaine was moved to a minimum security camp with, like, two Real Housewives and Elizabeth Holmes that allows them to have puppies and stuff. So, like, which is not something that sex offenders normally are allowed to do.
No.
But anyway, Todd Blanche was the one behind that interview. Todd Blanche does seem to have his fingers in a lot of aspects of the Epstein case. At the end of this, do you think that Blanche is going to be in trouble? Or do you think that he's just going to – do you think he's going to evade actually facing any heat?
I mean, it's pretty wild that the person who is the personal lawyer for the president is now inside DOJ, which is meant to protect Americans, not be the personal attorney for the president.
Yeah.
And is in charge of all this stuff and is just like having conversations with Ghislaine Maxwell and we don't know what's happening. I mean, I feel because he is the most vanilla, boring kind of person on the planet that he will probably escape any real punishment. There are so many more colorful lunatics out there.
Yeah.
I think Todd Blanche isn't a job he should not be in for ethical reasons, but Todd Blanche is not an idiot. So I am sure that Todd Blanche has a diary or a series of files and is taking care of himself to protect himself when this is all over. Because he knows the chickens are going to come home to roost in one way or another when Donald Trump is not president anymore.
Yeah, I think that there's a couple of different categories of Donald Trump toadies. Mm-hmm. And there is the CYA toady, the like cover your ass toady that has like – they have a cue in their head of like who gets under the – who gets thrown under the bus before they do. And hopefully by then the bus is slowed down from hitting so many people.
That feels very Stephen Miller.
Yes. And then I think that there's the YOLO people who just don't think about the consequences. And they're like, he's going to live forever. We're all going to live forever. And I think that's kind of like the Pete Hegseth.
Where totally.
It's, where, and I think maybe Kristi Noem was like that too. We're just like,
I was going to say,
this is never going to end. Everything is going to be the same forever.
We're going to go on forever.
And I'm always going to be – everything is – nothing is going to change and it's all going to be fine. And when he's gone, we're just going to carry on like a chicken with its head cut off.
And Scott Bessent is the guy who's just like always hiding under a table.
Yeah, Scott Bessent is – I would really like to see him as a character in a Christopher Guest movie. Don't like him in The Cabinet though.
I agree.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, our interview with first partner of California, Jennifer Siebel Newsom. Hysteria is brought to you by Aura Frames. This Father's Day, you can show off some of the best pics you have of your dad with Aura Frames. Alyssa, what are your favorite pics of your dad?
You know what? So it's actually funny because we are a big Aura Frame family. There's a whole family account that uploads to the Aura Frame at my parents' house. And my favorite picture is one summer. It was very hot out. And my dad and my niece JJ are both having a lollipop on the swing set.
Oh, that's really cute.
It's really cute. And so I was like, I was thinking to myself, I'm like, I don't think that one's in the rotation. I got to add it to the rotation.
Oh my gosh. I'm guest hosting What a Day this week. And I read an ad for Aura Frames for What a Day as well. And when I kept laughing as I was doing it, because I was realizing that all my pictures of my dad from when he was young are him holding like a piece of sports equipment, like a bat. Or a gun and a dead thing.
Like, love that sounds, for you.
It sounds very gruesome, but like I think if you grew up in a rural area, a lot of pictures of your dad are him like holding onto some like damaging object. I've got so many pictures of my dad holding a bat, not like threateningly. He just like has.
No, it's just like he's doing stuff. He's got a bat.
Yeah, he's doing stuff. And it's also like what occasions were there for men to be photographed when they've hunted, when they've fished? When they when they're planning on hitting some home runs or at least ground rule doubles, you know, it's but now that we've now that my dad's a grandpa, there's more pictures, like sweet pictures of him with the grandkids.
Yeah, same. Less multitasking.
There's pictures of my dad in the garden, and it kind of reminds me, like seeing pictures of him when he was younger, and even like with my own kids, it just brings me this feeling of like, oh, I am kind of like him in ways that are unexpected. Like pictures of him, like I'm not a hunter, but I do love to garden. And that's like 100% directly passed down in my, from my dad's DNA.
Yes, my dad, not a gardener, but a lawn maintenance master.
Oh, yes.
And so I have become, look, I'm out there with my turf builder. And
I got a string trimmer for Mother's Day the other year. I got a string trimmer because I wanted one. I wanted
That's
a string
awesome.
Trimmer. Anyway, we love looking at pictures of our dad. And
we do. Like, they're
this
the best.
Conversation could just be a show. We're
could
so excited
be.
Thinking about our fathers and how funny they are and cool and stuff. So that's why Aura Frames is just a great addition to any home. You can just take a gander at it and remember all the good times.
All the good times.
And the people that make you laugh and the people that love you. With Aura Frames, you can integrate reminders of your favorite memories into your day-to-day. Every frame comes with unlimited storage and simple control, so you can upload as many photos as you want, and Dad can pick the perfect one. It's a perfect gift. Preload photos before it ships. Add a personalized message. In a premium gift box with no price tag. You know what? No wrapping paper. Something Dad's
perfect.
Loved. Dads yes. are terrible at wrapping presents.
And you know, it can't be recycled usually.
Yeah, that's true. Aura makes it easy to shop for Dad. Named number one by Wirecutter, you can save now by visiting AuraFrames.com. For a limited time, listeners can get $35 off select frames with code Hysteria. That's AuraFrames.com, promo code Hysteria. Support the show by mentioning us at checkout. Terms and conditions apply.
Hysteria is brought to you by Ritual. We know the importance of a good night's rest to keep up with the demands of a busy schedule, but it can be tough to switch off and relax at the end of a long and tiring day. Ritual's Magnesium Plus is a blend of magnesium bisglycinate and tart cherry powder for mind and muscle reaction, helping to unwind from the day and support restful sleep so you can wake up ready to take on the next day. Erin, this helps. I've tried it. This helps.
You know, I go through these. I've been like on a reorganizing my house kick because I have all this old stuff that it's time to throw away because kids keep needing new stuff, right?
Sure.
And I just reorganized my medicine cabinet and relocated my Ritual magnesium. And I was like, oh, this is where I put it. So anyway, I've been taking it again and my sleep has gotten so much better.
It really helps.
It really helps.
I take a lot of shit to help me sleep. But when I add this into the mix, it for me personally, it helps. I don't know why. Maybe it's because it relaxes me, but I don't have as many bad dreams when I take it.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I was having a bad dream last night, and in the middle of the bad dream, I was like, oh, this is a dream. And then I just like was like, I'm
You're
not
like,
going to
stop. Sometimes I will wake up and I'm like, stop it. This is just a dream.
Yeah. I'll be like, I was like, this is a dream. And then I could just, I just carried on with the rest of the dream being like, okay, you're so scary.
All right, keep going.
And I can't say that it was the magnesium plus that did it, but that is not something that would normally happen unless I have taken something to.
Were you dreaming about a bad bowl of punch from Widow's Bay?
No. I'll tell you more about it later. Magnesium Plus features a blend of clinically backed magnesium bisglycinate and tart cherry powder formulated to help support mind relaxation, sleep, and muscle recovery. Ritual selected a bioavailable form of magnesium that's gentle on the stomach. It's clinically studied to support stress and mind relaxation, ease leg cramps during pregnancy. It is also great for supporting period cramping and providing PMS support. You know what? Mm. I still get cramps.
After
having kids. Well, it was like a thing during pregnancy because the child takes everything from you.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But it's like lingering.
They came back.
Yes. Magnesium also helps with that. The tart cherry is made from Michigan-grown Montmorency cherries, clinically studied to support muscle recovery and quality sleep, backed by over 20 clinical studies and 15 years of research. So sit back and raise your glass to your new evening ritual with Magnesium Plus. Save 25% off your first month at ritual.com/hysteria. That's ritual.com/hysteria for 25% off your first month. And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who know that California is the best state. Sorry. I've lived in a few, and a few of them are really good. But California's
you've never
the best.
You've been in New York City, but you've never hit upstate. You don't know what we have to offer.
I like upstate. There's too many bugs.
I don't disagree.
I like Illinois. Chicago is great.
Have you heard of the new tick, Erin?
I know. You guys got ticks up there. That's the thing.
The alpha gal. The alpha gal gives you – yes, the alpha gal gives you if you get bit by the alpha gal, you become allergic to meat and dairy.
Okay. I don't like that at all. And that's another reason – that supports my thesis here, Alyssa.
No, you're right.
Which is
all
that
right,
California is America's number one state. And honestly, I mean, it's kind of cheating. It's so big. It hogs all that coast.
You've got a little bit of everything.
We've got a little bit of everything, and we definitely have one of my favorite first families of any of the states.
I would agree with that.
Now we are so excited to be joined by filmmaker, advocate, and first partner of California, whoop, Jennifer Siebel Newsom. Welcome back to Hysteria, Jennifer.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to see you.
Yeah, it's good to see you too. Your new film, Misrepresentation, Rise Up, explores the increasing ways in which women are intimidated out of the public eye, whether it's running for office or simply by having a social media account. As a public figure yourself, how have you felt that pressure?
Well, it's one of the reasons I made Misrepresentation Rise Up, because AI and social media have been weaponized, as you said, to silence women, harm our mental health, our safety, and our power. And it's happening at an unprecedented scale to young girls in middle school and in high school. And they don't have the support and the community that can stand up and protect them. And so we really want to galvanize young women to rise up and have each other's backs, and our allies to have our backs as well.
We couldn't help but notice here at Hysteria that you have been targeted by conservative media in an increasing and noticeable amount recently. What's it been like to be on the experiencing end of that?
So, I mean, I think I learned early on it's not really my business what people think about me. I know who I am. I know what my friends think about me. These people don't know me. Obviously, once again, we're seeing this across the political spectrum, that technology is being weaponized, essentially, to silence us. And it's tried and true, and it's happened really prior to technology. It's been happening since really the beginning of time. It's, you know, when women are targeted, I would argue that there's something threatening to people in power. Otherwise, they wouldn't go after her.
Has there ever been an incident or like a Fox News like segment or a Tommy Lahren tweet or anything that has rattled you or that has gotten under your skin, even knowing what you know, that it doesn't really have to do with you, it has to do with what they're trying to do to women everywhere? Has anything ever really gotten to you?
Well, I think what's interesting is that the far right really is using women to go after other women. And that was what was really interesting to me, is I'm so used to this, like a community of women having conversations, supporting each other, celebrating each other, uplifting each other, wanting to help each other. So I find it very intentional on their part that they have essentially sent the women out to, you know, humiliate, demean, ridicule, mock, silence another woman. But that's just the patriarchy, right? I mean, that's just like turn us on each other. And that's what we have to fight against. And my, you know, again, I know none of these women. I've never met them. And you know, I imagine something bad happened to them at some point in time. But I think one of the reasons I made this documentary is for those women who think that their power is in silencing other women. My hope, my wish is that they understand that they're being used and that they have an opportunity to really right the ship and to reach out to other women and have other women's backs. When we have each other's backs, we're 51% of the population, we birth 100% of the population. Mm-hmm. And when our male allies join forces, we can actually make this country the democracy that it has always sort of imagined itself to be.
Gender representation and equality have long been at the forefront of your filmmaking, long before the words tradwife or manosphere were commonplace in our lexicon. Has your work pivoted at all during Trump 2.0?
That's a great question. I mean, my work has been consistent, but I didn't think I was going to have to make Misrepresentation 2.0 or even The Mask You Live In 2.0, because when Misrepresentation was born in 2011 and it was doing its work in the world, screening everywhere from Abu Dhabi to Singapore to Afghanistan, all across our country, people have stopped me and said they watched the film 7 times. It transformed their life. They were running for office. They were going into the media. It had such an impact. And then, yes, 2016 really contributed to this horrific backlash that we're all witnessing, on top of, again, the advent of social media, the like and share buttons, or somewhere around 2011, where we started to see this dip in girls' mental health, with, you know, 57% of them seriously or 57% of them feeling persistently sad and hopeless, 1 in 3 seriously considering suicide. And then we started to see the deepfake technology with 99% of deepfakes targeting women and girls and 96% of them being non-consensual deepfake pornography. And again, this is contributing to this downturn in women's political leadership and women using their voices in the public sphere.
Let's talk more about that, about the way that AI-driven, like non-consensual pornography or like sexual abuse images, I guess, since it's non-consensual pornography. Those didn't exist when you made the first installment of Misrepresentation. How and why did you decide that we needed another installment 15 years later?
I needed to make Misrepresentation 2.0 because I started to witness this backlash to women's progress and a silencing of women's voices. And also this extremism that was pulling our boys into the manosphere and feeding them these really dangerous narratives about what it is to be a man and ultimately who women were and what our value was. And so it's another reason I've started, you know, pre-production on the Masculine 2.0.
Has anything that you've covered in 2011 gotten better? I mean, this has been kind of a downer conversation,
right?
But like, have you noticed?
No, sorry. Well, you're here. You guys, you're here. You're both
We're
here.
Still
you have
here.
Voices.
Yeah.
You are still here. You have powerful voices. You are shifting the narrative. There are more women in leadership and, you know, power industries across the country and frankly around the world. But of course, you know, with two steps forward, one step back. We're just seeing lots of steps backwards or very big steps backwards, obviously, in our laws with regards to women's health, repro rights, criminalizing women who have abortions, all of the, you know, normalization of violence against women, the fact that here in the United States of America, we haven't held men accountable in the Epstein files the way they have in other countries around the world. So, look, there have been steps forward because you had the Me Too movement, women were using their voices, and it's not a surprise to me that there is this backlash. But again, it's because it's been weaponized by technology without guardrails, mm-hmm. technology that, and technocrats and the tech oligarchy that's really been in the hands and pockets of our current POTUS.
One of the more stark bits of information that we get in your film is sort of near the end when it's discussed how Facebook served up this. It made me so sad I rewound this, that Facebook served up ads to girls who had recently deleted selfies. Mm. And one of the statements in the film that goes on to make is there is no place on the planet where women are protected from violence. And I mean, that's the only sentence anybody actually really needs to deeply understand. And so when Dr. Mm. Sophia Noble says, we're beyond representation, we need power, it feels almost like the understatement of the year. So what does the path to getting more women in power look like to you?
I really think we need to have a call to men to intentionally partner with us. I think we need to socialize young men to understand the dangers and damages that are occurring as they engage in the manosphere, and the opportunity to them when they actually become allies. And everyone's suffering in this scenario. In the mm-hmm. current scenario in the United States of America, girls and women, boys and young men, are all suffering with these stringent, rigid stereotypes and gender norms that are being fed on the far right and that are being institutionalized via technology. And so it's really about, I think, educating boys and young men, just as it is about calling men in power to actually stand up, speak out, use their voice, stand up to sexism, and hold other men accountable for misogyny.
Let's talk a little bit about that. I'm a parent. I've got two little girls. They're 4 and 2, so they don't really know what's going on right now. But I think about stuff like that and these issues all the time as a parent. And I know that someday it's coming. Like, I'm going to have to deal with this. I'm going to have to explain the world to them. They're going to have an unpleasant encounter with technology and the way that it is. You've got kids that are a little bit older than mine. What advice do you have for other parents raising children in the era of deepfakes and powerful social media algorithms that are designed to make people feel bad?
First of all of us parents have a role, and one of the call to actions of Misrepresentation Rise Up is to go to our website and join the movement to rise up, share your story, volunteer for our partner organizations or engage with our partner organizations that are doing work to hold tech companies accountable, nominate a youth leader, host a screening, attend a screening. That's a critical first step for parents to understand that they have a role to play here, even if your kids are 2 and 4. Mm-hmm. And then because we want to set more guardrails in place and change the status quo so that the media and technology culture is safer when your children are older. And then I would also, follow our dear friend Jonathan Haidt at Anxious Generation in terms of don't give your kid a smartphone. I would say until they're 16. I gave my elder 2 phones at 14, and I feel like that was too young. But again, states and the federal government needs to pass legislation to ban social media before kids are 16. So there's so many things we can do, and we have to take our citizen responsibility very seriously. We need to vote people into power that actually represent us and share real family values. And I would argue that those of us on this side of this issue who want, yes, we want innovation with guardrails, but we demand that technology protects our children and women and vulnerable populations. And therefore, there just needs to be more transparency and accountability, period, full stop. Mm-hmm.
All right. One fun question before we wrap. In a world that is insane, what is keeping you sane? What is your way to dissociate from the TikTok of news and to just enjoy yourself? What's your favorite thing to do?
Time with my girlfriends, dancing, my husband somewhere nearby. time with my children in nature, with animals, just breathing
and grass.
Moving my body. Touching grass. No, I know. We're so lucky in California. We have amazing parks and a great climate. So I spend as much time outdoors as I can.
What's your favorite park in California? I live in California. So do you have any inside info?
It's my neighborhood. It's my neighborhood. I love Phoenix. I love hiking around there. But what I love is we have deserts. We have the mountains. We have an incredible climate and incredible topography. And so I'm literally happy in any part of California, Central Valley, the beach, you name it.
Anywhere from Pinnacles to Channel Islands, you'll find the first partner of California. Thank you so much for joining us, Jennifer Siebel Newsom. And thank you for your
thanks for having me. Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having
you.
Me.
This story is brought to you by Fast Growing Trees. Erin, did you know Fast Growing Trees is America's largest and most trusted online nursery with thousands of trees and plants and over 2 million happy customers?
Now I do.
Okay. They have all the plants your yard or home needs, including fruit trees, privacy trees, flowering trees, shrubs, and houseplants, all grown with care and guaranteed to arrive healthy. It's like your local nursery, but anywhere you live, with more plants than you'll find anywhere else. Whatever you're looking for, Fast Growing Trees helps you find options that actually work for your climate, space, and lifestyle. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to get your dream yard. Just click order and grow and get healthy, thriving plants delivered to your door. Their Alive and Thrive guarantee promises that your plants arrive happy and healthy, no green thumb required, just quality plants you can count on. Plus, get ongoing support from trained plant experts who can help you plan your landscape, choose the right plants, and learn how to care for them every step of the way.
Gardening is great.
Gardening is the best.
Gardening is the best, but it can feel daunting. I think if you're somebody that's just getting started, or
it
if,
can,
or if you're like in a different, like USDA zone,
you're in a new zone,
yeah,
don't know what to do, or climate change
right.
killed everything last summer. Mm-hmm. Hello, that happened to me.
Yeah,
and sometimes you just gotta you need to like shift. I am shifting to exclusively native plants mm-hmm. here at my house, and that. I can't tell you how many more bees and butterflies I have.
It's amazing. But mm-hmm. it's also, you know, and you can have good intentions and want to do that. And local nurseries, you know, have their place. But something that I found frustrating is if I go to the nursery and I'm like getting tomatoes and they're like, oh, this week's shipment didn't have what we wanted. Or like, I want to get this one particular thing. And you're sort of at the right. mercy of whatever they got.
Sometimes I have specific wants and needs.
Exactly. And it's reassuring to order plants knowing that they're guaranteed and supported by experts and knowing that you can like bother them about it. And I'm not saying,
yeah,
you
just,
know, you could be like, hey.
Lob a little question their way.
Right. That's what they're there for. They literally built that into the business model is like people need help. People want to find the right plants for them. They want the plants to arrive healthy. And then when they get there, they want to know how to care for them. And so that's why Fast Growing Trees
yeah.
is a great one-stop shop for people who want to kill fewer plants this year. you don't need a big yard or lots of space. You can grow lemon, avocado, olive, or fig trees indoors, along with a wide variety of houseplants, all grown with care and hand-selected to thrive in your home. Right now, they have great deals on spring planting essentials, up to half off select plants, and listeners to our show get 20% off their first purchase when using code Hysteria at checkout. That's an additional 20% off better plants and better growing at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code Hysteria at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code Hysteria. Now's the perfect time to plant. Let's grow together. Use Hysteria to save today. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who plan to never talk about Spencer Pratt again.
That's good.
Yeah. As soon as I said those words, I was like, do I want to put that in the universe? Because right before the 2016 election, no, Spencer Pratt, for people who are not like following along breathlessly at home, Spencer Pratt has fallen to third in the ranking of Los Angeles mayoral
candidate. But he held
candidate.
On to second for a couple dangerous days.
For a couple dangerous days, it looked like he had a pretty comfortable lead among Nithya Raman, the city council member who is kind of more DSA aligned and on like further to the left of Mayor Karen Bass. Democrats and progressives were hoping in a blue city we would have a substantive debate moving into the general election in the fall, because having Bass and Raman face off means that we get some really interesting intra-democratic conversations. And I think it's going to be great. With Pratt, it would have just been fucking annoying. And everybody would have had to be like, there would be no progress on the way
right.
that Democrats handle managing the city. And now there will be. So that's good.
I love it for you guys.
There was a few days, though, where Spencer Pratt was in second place. And
yeah.
Nithya Raman overtook him. And now the AP has called the race. And in the fall, it'll be Raman and Bass facing
right.
off. Spencer Pratt, he said he was going to leave LA if he didn't win. So...
Well, we've heard that before.
I mean, Rush Limbaugh promised to move to Costa Rica if Obamacare passed, and his disgusting ass croaked in Florida. Liar.
Oh, God.
Okay, yeah, no, it is nice. Finding out Spencer Pratt is not going to be in the mayoral runoff is sort of like, I was better off before I was worried that he was. But now compared to being worried that he was, I feel good, but it's just compared to something really bad. Anyway, so we're never going to talk about him again. He sucks. Before we get to Sani Petty, some announcements for the class. It's Pride Month. It's here.
Yay.
Time to dress like it. This season, the Crooked Store is mm-hmm. dropping gayer than ever in two brand new designs and bringing back an old favorite, the Gay for Democracy shirt. Plus, classics like Dreamboat Willie return in a new colorway alongside the ever-reliable Join or Die tee. Whether you're celebrating with your community, showing up to a protest, or guilting your straight friends into buying you Crooked merch in the name of gay rights, there's something here to match your Pride Month style.
And let's be honest, Pride doesn't end. You'll be wearing these long after June. Head to crooked.com/store to shop.
All right. Let's get to Sani Petty. Alyssa, what do you have?
After the week I've had, it's all Sani for me.
Okay.
I, for a couple of months, have been working on a, it's new to the community. So every year on Columbus Day, our local library has a book sale. And And my friend Mona and I have decided that we want to try to double the library's budget by doing a cookbook sale. We don't know if it'll be annual. We're hoping it'll be annual, but it's in a couple weeks. And I am going to be at the Hudson Farmers Market this Saturday at the library booth. I'm at the community vendor booth, hawking wares for the library. We're selling a little merch, giving out postcards so people know when and where the cookbook sale and festival is going to be. But I'm like very excited. Karen, I've been out flyering. I'm putting posters up. I'm talking to local shopkeepers. We're getting like some vintage collections from people like in maybe some fancier parts of the county who have collections and who have since passed and are like, why sell these at auction when we can give them to you for your cookbook festival? So anyway, I'll be there. If anyone's in town, come stop by, say hi to me at the farmer's market, and we'll link in show notes where you can find the cookbook festival, because it's going to be good, wholesome fun, and there's going to be beer and wine on a Saturday.
Hell yeah. That's really exciting, Alyssa.
Yeah, so that's me. I'm getting outside, touching grass, setting up tents, stacking books. I'm excited. What are you doing?
When you started the story with Columbus Day, I was like, I've been listening to – do you know the Fall of Civilizations podcast?
Yes.
Okay. It's like if you want to listen to like 6 hours about the ancient Sumerians – that's a great podcast. Every episode is like so long. It is hours long. But I'm listening to the Aztecs one now, and the host goes into kind of how awful Christopher Columbus was. Like, he was such an awful person. He was like known for being awful in Spain, which was at the time full of people who were like cool with awful people. He was just like terrible, a murderous bastard, like just a complete fuck. And so when you brought up Christopher Columbus, I was like, I have nothing left for Christopher Columbus. I was like, it's just the feeling of being like, oh yeah, he sucks.
Yeah,
so bad.
Maybe I mean like the second or third week in October. Okay. I should have just said the second or third week of October.
Yeah, that day. I also learned from the podcast that like apparently the Aztecs were drinking, they were like tripping balls all the time.
Oh yes, this I know. Yeah,
they were drinking like a fermented wine that causes you, it's like a hallucinogenic, and so they were all like, yeah man, there's no difference between life and death. And then they thought the sun was a hummingbird god, and then if it didn't have enough energy, it would fall out of the sky, and so in order to give the sun its energy back, they cut people's hearts out because they thought that the warmth from our bodies was pieces of the sun.
Wow.
Yeah. But they were, like, also tripping balls. Like, that, it's like, oh, yeah,
seems
course.
Like a really chaotic time to live in, though.
They were very organized about being murderers. They did war.
When they weren't drinking the wine.
They were not, but they did war to capture people to come back and kill for the hummingbird god. It's so fucked up.
So that they could take the heart and give it back to the sun.
To the sun, yes. It follows logically, Alyssa. Just
you
follow along.
Listen to dark shit.
I do, but you know what? It helps me dissociate.
You know, I get it.
It is podcasts about the Aztec or Disneyland, man. There is no middle ground.
And I got to tell you, I'm like, I either need The Dish, the British podcast, where they like talk about food and interview people, to come out with like 5 episodes a week, or I'm going to need, they're the only things that soothe my soul right now.
Oh my God. Well, here's something that didn't soothe my soul. I'm feeling petty.
Oh no.
Gwyneth Paltrow went on Trace Stevens's podcast. Trace Stevens is like a good bro of Peter Thiel. And he's kind of associated with that part of Silicon Valley that has gotten like weirdly Christian.
Is this the arugula?
I don't know if this is the arugula one. This is Gwyneth Paltrow going on this podcast and having a conversation with this like military tech entrepreneur psychopath and talking about how she is a staunch independent.
Oh, so she's a Republican.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's super weird. It really represented this kind of here like before this invisible connection between like Silicon Valley tech dickheads who have kind of veered to the right politically and the like maha moms that enable them and vote for the same candidates that they vote for. It felt like this very unholy like Goop meets Palantir, and it was like, oh yuck, this is gross. We need to erase it all.
Oh my god, girl,
over.
Just stick with your peptides.
Yeah, it's like erase it all and start over. Like I think that there's something that Hollywood has in common with Silicon Valley, which is that I think that a lot of criticism of Hollywood from outside of the industry is that these people don't know what other people think of them. They surround themselves with like a cocoon of adoration and affirmation, and they never really have to encounter the reality, which is that they're kind of like sniffing their own farts. 100% true. Totally get it. But Silicon Valley in this is also very insular in a similar way.
For sure.
If you're around someone from Silicon Valley, listening to them talk, it's like, oh, you have no idea how other people think. You have no idea what other people think
right,
of you.
Right.
And I think the Gwyneth Paltrow, Trey Stevens podcast is a perfect example of like, oh, yeah, these are two little bubbles touching. And like regular people hate these people. And they're just kind of in their own little world, frolicking
just
around.
Just like chit-chatting.
They kind of remind me of, you know, in the H.G. Wells story, The Time Machine? You know, the people that are like the soft, gentle little childlike people that frolic above the earth?
Yes, yes.
And then at night, the Morlocks come out and hunt them. Like, that's kind of what we're getting to. I feel like there's like this upper class that does not know that there are people that are like, we want to eat you. We want to eat you all.
We're going to take all your Goop products, but then we're going to eat you.
Yeah. And, you know, I like Gwyneth Paltrow I loved her in her trial. I think she's...
Oh, my God. Her outfits were so good.
I loved her in her trial. I thought her acting is good. But, like, right now I'm just like, oh, God, you're really annoying, aren't you?
Ugh. We just don't necessarily need other commentary from her.
No. No, I don't give commentary. There's things I don't give commentary on all the time.
Me too.
I don't talk about cars. I don't talk about MMA. I don't talk about tennis. I don't know what I'm talking. I shouldn't be. I shouldn't be talking about those
things. You know what? I feel like I there's a list of things I don't talk about because I'm like, you shouldn't want to hear me opine. I know nothing.
Mm-hmm. I get it. But yeah, Gwyneth, I just don't think spirituality from a person who has never, ever been uncomfortable in their life. Except maybe when they had to like travel to Utah for that thing. Like, I don't think that we really need to hear your political opinions, Gwyneth. Like, maybe stick to vagina eggs, I think.
Yeah, stick to
vagina eggs.
Your hot, expensive eggs.
And honestly, delicious salads. The Goop Kitchen is good.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
We just got it in New York. I love it.
Yeah. But that's great. Gwyneth, keep doing that.
Just keep the customer service high.
Yeah. And then there's this, Alyssa. It just broke on Tuesday that Gwyneth Paltrow is advertising luxury Israeli real estate. I mean, I know the entertainment industry is experiencing a historic slowdown, but like, you good, Gwyneth? Everything okay?
I mean, look, you know, she did do that ad. We don't know about Gwyneth. Remember, she did do the ad. You remember the two people who got caught kissing?
Yeah.
The CEO and remember she did a commercial for them after that?
Oh.
Because was it a Chris Martin concert?
Yeah.
And then when they like tried to clean up, she did some commercial for them and it like went bonkers. And anyway, maybe she's just like making.
I mean, I don't know. It just is sort of like, do you need money? Like, what's going on? You don't have to do this. You shouldn't. You don't have to do this. Like, did you Nicolas Cage everything you earned from like.
She might have.
She might have.
Who knows? Maybe that Brad. Who knows?
Yeah, that's true. Well, TBD. All right, that's all the time we have for this week's episode of Hysteria. We would like to thank Jennifer Siebel Newsom for joining us this week. Alyssa, thank you, as always, for being my ride or die.
Love you.
Listeners, do we have a question for listeners? I love, like, casting questions. Caroline doesn't like it because she gets endless alerts on her phone for all the emails people send.
Listeners, what are you looking forward to this summer?
Ooh, yes. What are you looking forward to this summer, listeners? Hysteria@crooked.com. We want to hear from you. I'm going to see if there's a consensus, like if there's something. We'll read a couple. Yeah. What are you looking forward to this summer? Also, I'm going to make tomato jam. I'm going to do it.
Oh, I'm excited. That recipe I sent you is good.
Is money. I'm going to let you know how it goes because I've like it's started. It's started.
The
tomatoes are starting to tomato and I'm already seeing that I'm going to have pounds and pounds and pounds of them. So I will let you guys know how it goes. Hysteria@crooked.com is the way to get in touch. If you want to let us know what you're looking forward to this summer, if you have a tip, if you have a question, if you have any ideas or corrections, as long as you say it
They're
nice.
They're gentle and loving.
Yeah. As long as you say it nice, we'll receive it nicely and maybe even issue a correction on the show. And there will be more hysteria for you next week. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Our show is produced by Caroline Reston, Claire Fogarty, Kendra James, Adrian Hill, Alyssa Mastromonaco, and me, Erin Ryan. Our team includes Matt DeGroat, Rachel Gajewski, Delon Villanueva, Claudia Sheng, Mia Kelman, Jay Banks, Charlotte Landis, and Jordan Cantor. Our staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.